Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Novel.
A listener note. This episode contains violence and content that some listeners might find distressing, including references to child abuse. Previously on Deliver Us from Ervil.
I think by the time Ervil had died, I knew it really wasn't over, because with such an unstable group founded on such erroneous principles, you never really know what to expect.
I'm Gabriella LeBaron, and my father is Ervil LeBaron.
This is the Book of the New Covenant. It's a manifesto of Ervil LeBaron.
Cult wasn't even a word we knew of. We called ourselves KOG. Like the mafia, right? So the mafia breaks apart. One team goes against the other team. Heber felt he had screwed up so bad, he gave the authority to the next brother in line, Aaron. This is God's law. We have to do it.
There were some threats made against Dan Jordan.
One of our lifelong dreams was to get our siblings who were under Dan's spell out of there.
Dan goes off to do his business, drops his drawers, and two people walk up and shoot him in the head and in the chest with a 9mm weapon.
No one seemed phased that a murder had occurred. And my afterthought on that is, I mean, murder was sort of a natural thing with these folks.
And different people would pray. We had this thing we called a solemn assembly, where each person in that circle would say their prayer.
I'm just trying to imagine, what would the prayers be like?
They would be specifically about the killings, yes. And they were trying to decide location and when and where. I just know the feeling of the meeting. It was all, like, of course, very ominous.
It was June 1987 when Lucy finally convinced her dad to let her join him in the United States.
I'm originally from Venezuela. I'm a sixth daughter of a family of nine.
Like so many migrants who uproot their lives to cross borders, Lucy's dad's journey to America wasn't just some grand adventure.
My father was struggling economically back in 1987. So he came and left a mom and all of us in Venezuela.
Ever since he'd arrived in Houston, Lucy had wanted to join him. He seemed to have made quick work of securing a steady income.
We were so excited when he found a job, and he told us that his boss had kids and he was a very good man.
Lucy was 19, and since her dad had settled in America so quickly, she thought, why not her too? The time was right for her to make the trip.
I remember asking him all the time, oh, I want to go. Send for me. And he was like, no, because you're going to school. And I was like, yeah, but I want to learn English. And so he said, okay, well, let me think about it.
And she didn't have to wait long. because her dad's boss had another job opening, a nanny for his four girls.
He lost his babysitter, and he needed to find a sitter
to watch them when he was at work at the appliance business he ran.
I said, I'll do it, Dad, send for me. And he told me, okay, well, get your visa ready. So I did.
Lucy arrived in the U.S. It was to be the start of a whirlwind romance. Lucy's boss was a man named Dwayne. Recently divorced, his wife out of the picture, he ran his business fixing up and selling appliances in Houston, with help from his mother and a couple of employees, including Lucy's dad. He'd set it up when he moved to the Houston area in 1981. And by this point, in 1987, business was booming. That's why he needed and could afford help with his children. But those kids with a busy single dad, they needed more than a babysitter.
I just became an immediate mom to four of his kids, four girls.
The more time Lucy spent with Dwayne, the more she found things about him that she liked.
He was introvert, but once you get to know him, he had such a good sense of humor, and he was an awesome dad. Loved his girls so much. And he was just amazing, really. Handsome. So it was not hard for me to fall for somebody like that. He was like my prince.
Shortly after Lucy turned 20, she was out with Dwayne on a job to pick up a washing machine.
We're driving, and he said, would you marry me? And I was like, yes.
Given the speed of their romance, Lucy hadn't had time to learn much about Dwayne's background. But she was already so close to his kids. And she'd met his mom, Thelma, who helped out sometimes running the family business. Once they were married, Dwayne began opening up more about his life, his past, introducing Lucy to more of his family members and some of his friends.
On our honeymoon, we did take a little few days off, and we went on a honeymoon and went to the hill country. We met his sister and her family, Rena.
Rena Chinoff, Dwayne's sister.
She was super nice, super sweet to me, and we just immediately just, you know, had a connection, and we were sweet. And then months later, I met Mark.
Mark Chinoff, Dwayne's brother.
And then I met Ed one day in Dallas.
This was Dwayne's best friend, Eddie Marston.
Met him and his girlfriend, and even went to a Dallas Cowboy game. He was fun and an awesome person.
Thelma, Eddie Marston, Mark, and Rena Chinoff, the significant people in Dwayne's life. But when it came to actual details about his past,
I remember him showing me a Book of Mormon and telling me a little bit about, you know, the story behind the Book of Mormon. But he really didn't want any religion in his life. I didn't know why. He said to me that, you know, past is past. He really wanted to put that past behind. So it was something he really didn't even want to bring up, remember, or anything like that. He was done with that. You know, I don't blame him, because he viewed it as a dark part of his life. So I don't blame him. I just feel like didn't want that to be something that got in between us. Little he knew what was going to happen. And he wanted to start a new life and, you know, forget and move on.
I don't blame Dwayne either. At least when it comes to wanting to forget his past. He was just 9 years old when his family converted into Ervil's Church. Just like his sister Rena and his brother Mark, he had little choice about entering into it. His parents, Thelma and Bud, made that decision for their kids. Duane was 17 years old when he and his brother Mark and his best friend Eddie attacked Los Molinos, indiscriminately shooting residents as they ran from their burning homes in terror. I can imagine they'd want to forget that night. Or when Duane was just 18 and he strangled to death the pregnant Becky LeBaron, holding the ligature together with 19-year-old Eddie and leaving Becky LeBaron's body in an unmarked grave in the forest. I'd want to forget all that. I often wish I'd never learned about it. But when I try to picture Eddie Marston, Mark Chenoth, and Duane Chenoth in 1987, I don't know. Did they actually believe they could simply move on? That their cult life was now behind them? When they abandoned Ervil's church as he sat in a prison cell in 1981 and they walked toward new lives in Texas? Or did they really, in their heart of hearts, know that this wasn't over? That it would all come tearing back into their lives eventually? Because if they did, if they had even the smallest inkling that any of the things they did in the name of Ervil LeBaron might come back to haunt them, then surely they would have thought about the people who might get caught up in their past, those who surrounded them in their new lives, the people they loved, like Lucy or Duane's kids, who all had absolutely no idea about the lives they lived out just a decade before. Eddie Marston and Mark and Duane Chenoth had belonged to a cult that would never let them go. Their names were written in the Book of the New Covenant. And one day, their past would eventually track them down. From the teams at Novel and iHeartRadio, this is Deliver Us from Ervil, Episode 11, at 4 o'clock. If there was one thing that brought Duane and Lucy together so quickly, it was the kids. The children were the reason they met, of course, but it was more than that.
He was a very family-oriented person, and so was I. So that was kind of like a bond we had.
The kids were a shared priority, and they both adored them.
Really awesome, awesome kids. They adore their dad, and, you know, they spent a lot of time with him.
Lucy came to love all the kids.
They were just good and sweet and full of energy, and it was just so nice and loving, and it was a very positive experience.
But some needed her attention more than others, especially little Jenny.
Jenny, she got teased a lot from her brothers, you know, typical siblings, but she was just so loving, and even though they got into little fights and arguments, she always just loved them back no matter what. She was a sweet, adorable girl. She's just, you know, a typical 8-year-old, curious and excited about life.
June 27th, 1988, was a nice summer day in Houston. Not too hot. That morning, the phone rang at Duane Chenoth's appliance repair shop. Duane was out on a delivery, so his mother, Thelma, picked up. The caller identified himself as Terry Phillips. He was moving from Houston and had a used washer he wanted to sell. Thelma wrote down the name and address. Did it seem strange to Thelma that the address was on Rena Street, the same name as her daughter? Maybe, maybe not. Either way, she told Mr. Phillips her son Duane would come and pick the washer up later that afternoon. Would he need help with the machine? No, it was fine. he'd handle it alone. The price offered for the machine was just $75. It was low, suspiciously low in retrospect. Had Thelma called back to check if that price was actually right, the number would have rung and rung. The call had come from a payphone at a gas station. There was no Terry Phillips. At some point after hanging up, whoever had made the call had glued the phone's receiver to the cradle so no one could pick it up, just in case someone did call back to talk to Mr. Terry Phillips. At around the same time, 500 miles north, the phone rang at Ed's Appliances in Irving, a suburb just west of Dallas. A guy on the line named Perry Wilson said he wanted to sell a used washer. Eddie Marston agreed on a price and wrote down the name and number and time to pick it up. If he would have called back, the phone would have rang and rang. Because again, there was no Perry Wilson. The call had been made from a payphone at a convenience store, and now its receiver was also superglued to the cradle. That afternoon back in Houston, Mark Chinoth was kicking back in an office chair. At the business he ran, Reliance Appliances. You guessed it, washers and dryers, the family trade. I picture him with his feet up on the desk as he waited for customers or for the phone to ring. And I wonder, did he hear the tires on the asphalt outside? Or the car pulling up to the storefront? Did he glimpse the outlines of the figures outside the shop window? The profiles of three of Irva LeBaron's children as they sat inside the approaching car in their disguises. Meanwhile, a 15-minute drive across town, Dwayne Chinoth was about to get in his truck to collect the cheap washer and dryer. He was supposed to go alone, but there was a last-minute change of plans.
Jenny was struggling with her reading. The teacher said that she needed to practice her reading, so he would take her, would leave me with the other kids at the store, and would take her with him so she could read to him while he's working, and she could practice her reading. And that's what happened that day.
A little before 4 p.m., Dwayne and Jenny got in the truck and set off for Rena Street. Lucy would never see either of them again. Standing on Rena Street, about 20 miles from downtown Houston, the first thing you notice is how normal the area is. There's a suburban tranquility to it. Well-tended lawns. There's an American flag waving at a house across the street. Some pumpkins left over from Halloween. Big magnolia trees. It's a solidly middle-class neighborhood. And considering what happened here, there's sort of an eerie quality to it all, just how placid and calm it is. Monday, June 27th, 1988. The three-bedroom brick house in front of me was vacant. Today, it's an odd house on this street. It sort of stands out for how it has an unkempt kind of wild feel. At just before 4 o'clock, Dwayne Chinoth pulled up to that house on Rena Street, but no one seemed to be home. If Dwayne had got out and asked a neighbor, they would have told him the house had been empty for a year. There had been a for sale sign up until earlier that day. Someone had moved it that morning. Dwayne wanted to get back home and was just backing up the driveway to leave when a black Silverado truck came barreling down the street, blocking Dwayne in. The truck driver had short blonde hair. In the passenger seat sat someone in a business suit with a strawberry blonde beard. The person in the business suit got out of the truck. Dwayne stepped from the cab of his GMC pickup. They exchanged a few brief words, and then the man in the business suit pulled a .357 Magnum from a shoulder holster beneath his suit coat. He then looked up into the cab and noticed the little girl. It was 4 o'clock. Back across town at Reliance Appliances, Mark Chinoth was still sitting in that swivel chair at his desk. But now, he had bullet holes across his face and chest, and a spreading pool of blood at his feet. He had just been shot at 4 o'clock, too. Seconds before in Dallas, Eddie Marston had been backing his pickup into the driveway of a home on the west side of town when a dark pickup blocked him in. A gunman emerged, shooting Eddie in the head and chest. 4 o'clock. Within just 4 minutes of each other, four people were dead. All glory to the kingdom of God. More after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
We are in Huntsville, which is roughly an hour and 20 minutes north of Houston through a pretty wooded, green part of Texas, sort of forested, tall trees. We are on our way to meet with retired detective John Burmeister.
John, how you doing? Jesse, how are you?
Well, I've been
expecting you, so I'm fine.
I like how the horses are able to just wander around the yard. That's nice.
Oh, except with the shit everywhere. Shut up, dog.
We're an hour roughly from downtown Houston, but it feels like a world away. Cowboy hats at the gas station, pasture, horseshit. John Burmeister spent 25 years as a Houston homicide detective.
We can gather up some lawn chairs and sit in the sun. How's that?
Sounds great. Yeah.
We're doing the interview outside in his front yard to not disturb his wife, who was inside sick the day we arrive. Occasionally, a farm truck passes by at the end of his driveway. John is a large man. Big, broad shoulders, big hands, white hair. And the way he looks at you, you immediately get the sense this is a man not to be fucked with. Kind of looks like Santa gone bad. In the 1980s, when John was working homicides, Houston was booming.
It was a pretty busy time for us. We were probably having about 500-plus homicides a year. I was on the evening shift, always had been. And the evening shift comes in, it's 4 to midnight. And you basically, if a scene comes in, if there's a homicide, the patrol unit that gets the initial call figures out, yeah, we need to do some investigating on this one, and they call the office, and the supervisor decides who's going out.
June 27th, 1988, John remembers he was working the night shift. He had just got in and was doing some paperwork when he got the call.
We had no idea what we were getting to. There's two scenes dropped at the same time. And the lieutenant got the word that the two might be related. And, my partner and I went out on one, and another team went out on the other.
John was headed to Rena Street. His lieutenant didn't tell him much. The suspects were unknown. When John arrived at the scene, crowds had already gathered. Cops had roped off the crime scene with yellow tape.
The streets were filled with lookers, you know, nosy folks. It was kind of chaotic. There was a lot of blue suits, a lot of uniformed officers there. There wasn't much of a scene to be preserved. And the officers that made the original call were doing the best they could to preserve what there was, but everything was kind of within 10 foot of the pickup truck.
Standing on Rena Street, John walked over to get a closer look at the truck, piece together what might have happened. I'll warn you, this next piece of tape is very hard to listen to. Skip ahead about a minute and a half if you'd rather not listen.
The first thing I noticed was that it was blood leaking out of the truck. And I walked to the passenger side, and I remember a little girl being slumped over in the front seat. And it was afternoon, and the sun wasn't high up in the sky, and the light was shining through the truck. The sunlight was shining through the truck, and you could actually see light coming through the little girl's skull from the entrance to the exit. And that was the eeriest thing I've seen all my life. And it just was kind of an emotional moment there for a little while.
What did you feel in that moment?
Well, I thought about my little girls. And, you know, I just keep thinking, who would do something like that? And I never could believe that somebody would actually target a little girl like that.
Moving away from the crime scene, John approached some of the first responding officers, had his notebook out. The investigation had begun.
The officers told us that there were no actual witnesses to the shooter, but there was some people that heard the gunshots and came out and saw some people getting into, I think it was a truck, and leave.
Neighbors told the detectives they'd seen a black Silverado truck cruising the street all day leading up to the shooting.
And we got kind of a description, but it wasn't anything unusual. you know, it was a guy in a suit with a beard, which really didn't tell us a whole lot. And it turned out that the other scene, the one on Blaylock, was directly related because it's the same family and they were actually brothers.
Blaylock that John's referring to here is Blaylock Road. It's a boulevard about 10 miles west of downtown Houston. It's where Mark Chinoth ran his shop, Reliance Appliances. An hour later, as John and his partner were arriving back at the police station, they learned that Mark had been shot there.
The office was full of people. And it, well, it confirmed that it was a hit, and that it was kind of hard to understand what it was all about at first.
As John and his team prepared themselves for the investigation, some of his colleagues were already with the victims' families. The first time Duane's wife, Lucy, sensed something wasn't right was around 5 p.m., more than an hour had passed since Duane and little Jenny had left the house together.
I'm trying to call him, but he's not answering. He's not picking up. So I started calling, no answer, you know, and so we probably thought he was busy, you know, and outside the truck and couldn't hear the phone.
Then her phone did ring, but it was a friend of Duane's.
I noticed something was strange because his friend called very worried.
This friend had just heard the news about Mark Chinoth getting shot.
So he was trying to prevent or warn Duane about what's just took place. And we couldn't get a hold of him.
A couple of hours passed, nothing.
I'm still trying to put the puzzle together with what's going on. So about an hour or two, the police come in. And they tell us that both of them were dead. As I was still trying to gather and, you know, come to terms with what the news they just told me, I couldn't believe it. To me, it was just so real. It was like, no, you this can't be true. You know, just how can this happen? And it just all came tumbling down, but it was just, it was so shocking. It took us, you know, days to come with grips with it. And who did it and why? And that's when his past just came to the surface.
That's coming up after the break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
As police started to piece together the motive behind the 4 o'clock murders, they told some of the Chinoff family that they wanted to take them into protective custody for a few days. Rena Chinoff seemed the most at risk. Two of her brothers had now been murdered, one of them on a street that shared her name. Worst of all, she'd been named in Ervil's Book of the New Covenant too, and that meant execution. She agreed to the protection initially, but then she went home. She figured that if the kingdom of God wanted her dead, they would have killed her when they killed Mark and Dwayne and Eddie Marston. But Rena did skip the funeral.
You know, security measures, they did not want her at the funeral because they have done that before.
When Lucy says, done that before, she's talking about using a funeral as a lure for further killings. This lure was the cult's plan back in 1977 with the aborted assassination attempt on Ervil's brother Verlin. The police now knew about that connection. So when it came to this funeral, they weren't taking any chances. The funeral had been delayed so it could take place on a Saturday. That way, off-duty officers could be called in for extra security.
That day was a very, very sad day for all of us. And I remember they shut down one of the main freeways, I-10, which is super busy. It's an interstate. They shut that down and security was really high.
Over 50 officers, including FBI agents, detectives, uniformed officers, and a SWAT team armed with automatic rifles, surrounded the chapel at the Waltrip Funeral Home in Houston. Inside, the pastor of the Church of God, where Mark had played the organ and driven the school bus for Sunday school, stood before the 100 mourners in a bulletproof vest. Three coffins of gloss dark wood and one tiny pink coffin stood in front of the congregation. Before they could be wheeled outside for the 10-mile trip to their final resting place, a police dog sniffed its way around the limousines and all four hearses, searching for bombs. As the caskets were lifted from the hearses, police fanned out, creating a defensive perimeter in the surrounding trees and tombstones. Not long after the funeral, Rena and her mother Thelma did agree to go into protective custody. But that didn't mean they would live their lives in hiding. In fact, kind of the opposite. It was around this time that Rena started telling her story to the writer Dean Shapiro for her tell-all book where she confessed to killing Rulon Allred. The recordings you heard in episode 5. Interesting timing. And Rena wasn't done there, nor was Thelma.
After that, the police talked to them, you know, so did Rena. They were probably the ones that talked the most to the police because of all the information they knew.
And all the time these former cult members were doing this, more than 1,000 miles away in Sonora, Mexico, in that base they called BFA, the current incarnation of Ervil's cult, the kingdom of God, were starting to absorb the impact of the 4 o'clock murders. In the immediate aftermath, they waited for news.
When something very serious was going on, we would do those kind of heavy loaded prayers. So that was the spirit that we were in BFA. In support of the 4 o'clock murders happening in the States.
The group had planned the whole hit together. Not just the targets, but the precise timing of the executions.
We knew that if one of the people got killed, then everybody would go in hiding. So they had to target all people at once. And that's why the 4 o'clock murders happened.
The killers had to strike in unison, choreograph it perfectly, with the kind of precision militaries aspire to. And they had. Except, well, not quite. Because later, when the news of the killings finally did reach down across the border, through Chihuahua and across Sonora to Navajo, the cult were learning of that fourth unplanned murder. Jenny. The assassins had made a mistake.
There was no contingency plan for that situation. And it was a horrific, like, spur of the moment, what the hell do you do? And we never could have any witnesses. And I know this is, I know that this is all public knowledge now, but I hate to talk about it. But I do know that it was terrible, and we never thought of that possibility. Like, what the hell would you do if that happened, you know, in that situation?
In a situation where there was a possible witness, this was not vengeance. Without the Book of the New Covenant for guidance, the 4 o'clock assassins had to improvise.
Those who participated in the 4 o'clock murders, had they killed before?
I think only the youngest one hadn't. I think that was his first time.
The youngest one that day was 17-year-old Richard LeBaron.
Richard was a, he was overall fun, overall laid back. He was, he never was one of the authorities, never. He worked really hard. They made him work really hard. He learned how to shoot guns, and he would stay up on guard all night, but he would make jokes out of everything. He was ready to crack a joke and turn everything into a joke. I liked Richard in that he was just fun. He was never violent. He was never mean. He was one of the easygoing, you know, never part of the patriarchy drama or, you know, none of that. He was always one of the kind of a happy-go-lucky personality.
It was the happy-go-lucky Richard who shot and killed 8-year-old Jenny. But the cops wouldn't find that out for years to come.
Did you notice any kind of a change after that with those who participated? I mean, when there would be a mission like that, did that harden those who participated in some of these killings?
The hardened part happened so long before that. And there were killings already of people much closer to us. So that part was much more difficult. We had to be prepared to kill the people we loved the most. And that was the only way to save their souls. They would be thankful to us in the end, because otherwise they would go to hell forever over our cowardice. You have to love them so much that you have to kill them so that they don't suffer forever. And stealing ourselves for that reality made everything else, there was nothing else that was even remotely as severe.
Do you remember who introduced you to the idea?
Of what?
Blood Atonement.
That was one of the things that we were, you know, from the crib growing up, we always knew, basically. I don't know.
How do you feel about that concept today?
It's horrific. Are you kidding? But it makes me understand. I understand what it's like to live in a terrorist organization. And, like, I understand how mothers who strap bombs to their children feel. You know, it's the most horrific thing you could imagine, but you think you're doing it for a higher good. It's terrible. It's like satanic horrific.
Despite Gabriella saying that the 4 o'clock killings didn't further harden the group, from an outside perspective at least, it definitely changed them. Changed their trajectory from that path set in motion a generation before, ever since Ervil had his own brother Joel killed by his followers. The 4 o'clock murders reignited a nationwide hunt for the cult, re-energizing that federal investigation that had started with Dan Jordan's killing. The FBI, cops, and prosecutors working with Detective Dick Forbes. Now, with a new determination that surpassed anything that had come before, a fresh focus and energy, and new informants. They leaned on all their sources, put former cult members like Thelma and Rena Chinoff in front of a grand jury, extracted any useful information they could get. They would name this new operation after the child, the Jenny Task Force. They were going to pursue this new generation of Irvel LeBaron's cult like never before. But investigators were still going to need some luck, and a kind of crucial break journalist Dale Van Atta had laid out to Detective Dick Forbes all those years ago, back when they were first uncovering the full extent of Irvel's cult. They were going to need to turn someone on the inside. Members of the KOG itself were going to need to crack.
Well, it happened just before Christmas. She called Forbes. Forbes called us, and she wanted to meet us a couple days later, right after Christmas. We knew we had it. When they came forward, that's all it took.
That's coming up in episode 12 of Deliver Us from Irvel. Deliver Us from Irvel is hosted by me, Jesse Hyde, and written and reported by me, Leona Hamid, and David Waters. Production from Leona Hamid and David Waters. Sean Glynn and Max O'Brien are executive producers. Lena Chang and Megan Oyinka are researchers. Mariana Gongora is our field producer. Fact-checking by Danya Suleiman and Sona Avakian. Production management from Cherie Houston, Frankie Taylor, and Charlotte Wolf. Austin Mitchell is our creative director of production. Michael E. Rao is our managing editor. Gavin Haynes is our head of development. Willard Foxton is our creative director of development. Sound design, mixing, and scoring by Nicholas Alexander and Daniel Kempson. Music supervision by Nicholas Alexander and David Waters. Our music is composed by Julian Lynch. Special thanks to Scott Anderson, Scott Carrier, Del Van Atta, Pippa Smith, Saskia Edwards, Matt O'Mara, Katrina Norvell, and Beth Ann Macaluso, Oren Rosenbaum, Shelby Shankman, and all the team at UTA. For more from Novel, visit novel.audio.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.